This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I'm your other host, Kim.
Welcome to episode 13, where we review the 1986 fantasy film, The Highlander. Make sure you look for us on Instagram and Facebook at Attack of the 20th Century. That's 20th. We post our next movie selections there. You can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air. So last week, we didn't have an episode, but no. We have had quite a bit going on the last week.
Yeah.
We did get to go do something fun, though.
We've done several fun things.
Yeah, we have.
Now I'm paying for it, so I apologize, listeners. I do have a cold. It is not COVID. It's just a cold. We have that verified.
We do have that verified. Our kids have this cold. My wife has this cold. I've been holding off.
He's hanging far across the room from me now.
Yeah. But we got to get dressed up in 1920s garb and go to a 1920s party.
Yeah, that was super fun.
That was pre-cold.
Yes, that was before the cold. We did get to go celebrate a brother's girlfriend's birthday.
Yes, shout out to Anna. Happy 30th.
Happy 30th, Anna. Yeah, yes.
That was fun, a time period party.
We love an excuse to get dressed up in period pieces anyhow. So that was exciting and
was
fun
cool.
For us. Even the kids. The kids went too. Everybody was dressed period appropriate. So
yes.
That was a good time.
The very next night, we went to a ballet.
Yeah. I feel like we've been pretty cultured in the past, I don't know, 2 weeks, week and a half, whatever it's been.
We're going to sound pretty upper crust once we go through our list here.
Okay, so 20s party. Then we took our daughter to the ballet to see a production of Cinderella.
Right.
The ballet.
We went to an orchestral performance.
With our oldest son. And
featuring the works of Rachmaninoff.
Mendelssohn. Mendelssohn's violin concerto.
And Vincent Price.
No, not Vincent Price. Florence Price.
They Florence
did a
Price.
Piece by Florence Price. Yes. So that was just Saturday night, and now I've succumbed to the cold because of all of our fun things.
Sometimes we do too many things, and then we get sick. It's like
yes.
We try to cram too many things into one
I had a good time. So
yeah,
this won't take me out. Not yet.
I'll tell you about something I've been watching solo. There was a show called Snowpiercer that looked interesting. I've watched the first 5 episodes.
Okay.
And kind of the premise behind it is the world has turned into a frozen wasteland. And the powers that be recognized that this was happening ahead of time. So they built this gigantic train. It's like 100 and something cars long. And it's designed for its power to be self-sustaining. But it's got to stay in perpetual motion.
Oh, it's like a shark. Can't stop swimming.
It can't stop. And so during the time of the boarding, I guess the lower class who didn't have tickets, there was a group that rushed the train and got on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the upper class forced them to the back of the train.
Mm.
And they take pride in calling themselves the tail. And there's this whole...
Wait, I thought that was the caboose of the train. Yeah. The tail.
Not anymore. It's the tail. This is the future. Caboose doesn't exist.
It's a rough future for train cabooses.
Yeah. Well, I'm a fan of sci-fi and that kind of stuff. And I'm probably only going to watch season one and call it quits because I'm interested in how it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
They have like a murder mystery going on. But there's quite a bit of social politics, social commentary, upper class versus lower class and that kind of thing. So first class has it made basically.
Right.
Second class, third class, and then you have the tail.
Well, I feel bad for these guys.
So everybody's existence is really just trying to upgrade, you know. That a lot of the people in the tail, there's no way they can upgrade.
Wow.
And so there's quite a bit of insurrection going on and that kind of thing. So I realize that after watching episode 5, you know, first of all, it's a lot dirtier than I would normally watch.
Oh, gotcha. This is what you were watching while Nyla and I were watching Les Mis, correct?
Yes, yes. We'll get to Les Mis in a second.
Oh, but, dirt.
I'm just funny about politics. Like, I like to keep up with politics, but when I take refuge in my entertainment, I kind of like to disconnect from the politics.
You like your entertainment to be entertainment.
Yes.
I think we've mentioned that before.
We have. So this is almost too dead on the nose.
I see.
I will say, if you're a fan of Jennifer Connelly, she's fantastic in it. And the main reason why I keep watching it is her performance, and then the guy that's representing the tail, he's a police detective. They've pulled up from the tail because he was like the last police detective alive.
Oh, wow.
And they enlist him to solve a murder mystery that's happening in first class.
There's a little bit of Murder on the Orient Express happening here, too, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
So I think he would like that aspect. But his name is David Diggs. I've never seen him or heard of him.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, yeah. We might have to pause this because I'm going to school you on David Diggs.
What? Unknown guy, hasn't done anything else?
Are you sure?
No, I just brought up a picture of him. Yeah, I think he was from Hamilton.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was about to say. Dude, he's in Hamilton.
Oh.
He's Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, Thomas, you see? Okay, I recognize him now.
Yeah.
He looks way different in the show, though. He's got big dreads.
Okay, all right.
No glasses, and he doesn't sing or rap. He looks upset most of the time, actually.
Well,
his life stinks.
From the tail. Is it worse to be the tail or the caboose? Which is a worse title to have to live under? I don't know.
But then Jennifer Connelly, she's tortured most of the time, too. She is the head of hospitality. Oh, yeah, 2020.
Okay.
She's got the weight of the train on her shoulders. She's got to make sure everything is going right between first class, second class, third class. Deal with the rebellion coming from the tail. But she's not heartless, because some people in the first class are like, you know, we could just unhitch the tail and we wouldn't have to deal with them anymore.
Just pretend like they never existed. It's fine.
And it's so cold out there. If you get detached, you're dead.
Yeah, yeah. There's the whole earth is just cold.
It's just super cold.
Next ice age type
thing. There was one episode where, they're in the cattle car. And someone has broken a window on accident, and all of the cattle and the people in there just freeze to death.
Ew, so
like within a minute.
Being in space or something.
Yeah, it's like being in space.
Okay.
Unless you're Princess Leia, and then you just, float using the Force.
Yeah. Let's not open that can of worms.
Yeah, we won't do that. We won't do that. But yes, you were watching Les Mis. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. So Nyla is our daughter. She is, I won't say newly into show tunes and musical theater, because she has liked it for several years now, but is newly into really discovering what is out there besides what she's done in her dance class that covers musical theater, which, in class, she just gets little bits and pieces here. And so she's been on this kick where she's got the Alexa app playing, show tunes all day, and she just loves all the songs from Les Mis, and she's never seen it. So we went poking around looking for a free version to watch, which that was weird because we thought, didn't we look this up?
Yeah, we found a free version. It was with Anthony Perkins.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
From 1978, I believe.
Right.
We got about 30 minutes in it, and we found there was no singing.
It was just the movie. Yeah, it was not the musical, and so she was bummed about that. So
we just stopped it.
Yeah, we stopped that one, and ended up, I think we rented, right?
We rented the Hugh Jackman one.
Which I know that there are theater aficionados, nerds out there that maybe don't love the Hugh Jackman version and Anne Hathaway as much as some other versions, but I'm not a theater expert. So I said, sure, it's Hugh Jackman. Why not? Let's watch that. She's seen Greatest Showman, so she had some connection there, and she knows who Anne Hathaway is from all the other Princess movies. So yeah, so we watched that version of Les Mis, I think yesterday during the rainstorms.
Right. That's right.
Yes. So no, that was
you
fun.
Like it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it's such a great story, but so dramatic and tragic and traumatic, but it's really good. It's just, those songs are so epic.
I Dreamed a Dream has been in my head all day, by the way.
Right. Well, I mean, Nyla sings it like 24/7.
But yeah. And then that was a follow-up to what we did Friday night.
Oh, yes.
We watched, because I brought home a couple records for Nyla. One was West Side Story on record.
Right.
And then
Sound of Music.
Sound of Music.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I've never seen West Side Story.
Oh, I didn't realize you had never seen it.
Uh-uh.
Okay.
This is the one with Natalie Wood.
Yes. Which is the one I grew up seeing. It's the only one I've ever seen. I know there's probably 100 versions, but.
Oh, yeah. It was really good.
Yes. Very good. Very good.
We won't spoil the ending, but let's just say.
It's been around forever. But yeah, when the it kids got done, were mad.
When it got done, our 9-year-old says in this real gruff voice, "Well, that was the worst ending ever."
Does not end on a I warned them all. Guys, this is Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
In, inner city New York. So.
So I have something fun for us to talk about.
All right. It's got to be a Jeff question.
Well, this is more of a general, not a specific question, but
okay.
the theme of the Highlander is something that we see a lot with the movies that we review on this show, and that is immortality. So
it does come up a lot.
Whether you're an immortal from the Highlands, or you're a vampire, or you're a Greek god.
A Jedi.
Well,
sort of immortal, but not really.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, if you get to come back as kind of a hologram type thing, aren't you sort of immortal? I don't know.
I guess that could count, yeah. So there's quite a bit of immortality in the types of things we cover. But I just made me wonder, like, if you knew right now that you were going to live forever, what skills would you start trying to acquire?
Oh, because I have all this time now.
Yeah. So now you know, well, you can kind of map out the next several hundred years. Like, well, I'm going to spend the next 100 years getting really good at this skill, then that skill. So give me maybe top three. What are some skills that you would try to acquire? I'll get us started to give you a chance to think.
All right.
So one I've already started acquiring with the time that I do have, or that I hope that I have, is playing the banjo.
Jeff is immortal, if you didn't know.
Yes. Oh, lucky you.
Yay. I'll be out of here. I'm not immortal.
But yeah, of course, you know, we've talked before. I play guitar, I play bass, but then I got this hankering to play banjo, play bluegrass music. And there's a particular flavor of banjo playing called clawhammer.
Yeah.
And it's that real kind of like natural sounding
Appalachian
sound, you know. So I'm from West Virginia. I thought, well, this is my connection to my people, you know. All right. Let me try to learn this. And so I will say I haven't been sticking to it as I did when I first was learning guitar. Part of that is probably because, you know, I was really hoping to meet girls and that kind of thing when I was learning to play
guitar. Well, you were 15 when you started playing guitar, right?
Yeah.
You had a little more time on your hands, too.
I couldn't even drive, right?
Exactly. What are you going to do? Sit in your room and play guitar.
That's what I did. But now I have like a million things pulling at me. So I just try to like pick up the banjo and play. I do leave it out.
Yeah.
So that I'm able to just pick it up and play kind of 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there, 5 minutes here.
Hey, I think that's one of the tenets of that guy. What's his name? James Clear, that wrote Atomic Habits. Mm-hmm. It's like structuring your environment to encourage your habits.
Yeah.
So good job.
Yeah,
you're doing
thank you. You didn't even know it. I didn't know it.
So wait, am I supposed to give one now?
Yeah, give me a skill that you'd pick up.
All right, well, the first thought that pops in my head is languages. I love languages.
Ooh.
I'm not a master of any of them, probably not even English.
No, you're really good at English.
Well,
you use colorful language all the time.
Thank you. Yeah, but I do love, I mean, I've had some exposure in high school. I had some friends that came from Spanish-speaking families. So the little bit of Spanish that I was picking up in my high school classes, I actually got to use. So I was pseudo-proficient at it then. But, you know, you don't use it, you lose it. So that has gone by the wayside. And, of course, I spent almost 2 years in the Middle East and picked up a decent amount of Arabic.
Yeah, no, you,
but
you
again,
did well with them.
Living in Kathleen, I don't use my Arabic anymore. Mm-hmm. So that, again, you don't use it, you lose it. So I would love to have the time to, you know, really, really like master at least one other language. But heck, if I'm immortal, let's just know
learn
all the
all.
Languages. I mean, Thomas Jefferson knew like 6 or 7 or 8, right? Like,
yeah.
And he was definitely not immortal. So
yeah.
Yeah, I'd throw some
So what's the first one, though? Which language are you learning first?
Oh, well, definitely Arabic, because I love Arabic. I love Mideast culture. Like, I would nail that one down first. And I already have, you know, some groundwork there.
Yeah. My second skill, tennis.
Oh, okay.
You know, I want to, if I'm going to live forever, I don't want to just get fatter and fatter every year, you know, 5 pounds a year. You know, in 100 years, that's going to really add up.
Wow, you're going to be a big dude. The immortal that never leaves his house.
See, that's pretty much my average. Gain 5 pounds a year. So we need to reverse that and start playing tennis. Really learn how to play it. And maybe in 100 years, I could like enter the U.S. Open.
Take Wimbledon by storm.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's your next skill?
Oh, man. And I'm hoping that by learning to cook, I mean, yeah, okay, I can follow a recipe and I can get dinner on the table, but it's not a love of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I understood cooking methods in lots of cultures, so while I'm you know, gathering all these language skills, I'm also going to learn to cook, right?
Yeah,
and
true.
Then maybe I'll enjoy it more and I'll get really good at it.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was just, I'm being practical now. Like, these are skills I legitimately wish I had.
Well, that leads me to my third, which is also a practical skill, and financial planning.
Ah.
Because after you see market trends for yourself.
Right.
You know, not just looking at the studies, but like I'll live through hundreds of years of watching the market.
Oh, I see. You have like insight into what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I would be like the best financial planner ever.
Yeah.
And that could be something, you know, for people that I love and care about, you know, I could tell them what to invest in.
You think you would have been able, if you'd been alive for hundreds of years prior to the Great Depression, you think you'd you would have the skills to predict that that's coming based on market trends?
Well, I don't know about that, but I do think you have a great long-term perspective of money.
Well, yeah. That's,
you know, you're definitely not going to chase the short sale.
So you're planning on being rich and immortal is what you're saying.
Well, I think that just comes with, like, you could do almost nothing and become rich, right? Ben Franklin left his fortune to the city of Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah.
And whatever original sum that he left, if it had grown, like if they just invested it, whatever, it would be like billions of dollars today.
So, I bet they didn't do that, did they?
No.
So, city of Philadelphia, let us know how that worked out for you.
So if I could get, you know, 10 grand set aside, 15 grand, just put it in whatever the most conservative money market fund is in 100 years, you know, you're going to have a small fortune on your hands. 200, if not 200 years, it'll be a small fortune.
Yeah.
So you're going to make money for yourself no matter what, I
think. Sure, yeah.
It's really just helping others, I think, is the allure of this skill.
All right. That's very altruistic of you.
Oh, thank you. Do you have a third one?
I don't know that I have a third one. Like languages, cooking, like I can talk to anybody and I can feed myself and anybody around me. What's a skill that's missing?
What about an athletic skill? Because you like athletes,
yeah,
athletics.
Yeah, but I don't have a desire to be like the best at anything. Like I don't want to win the Olympics or something, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just going to hike all over the whole world. I'm going to...
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, because that's what I enjoy the most these days is just walking, hiking in nature. So I'm going to see the world by my own 2 feet.
I should say one thing that made me think of this question is when I was thinking about the Highlander, they say he's really good at antiques and that sort of thing because he's lived through these various periods.
Right. He knows exactly what is authentic because he was there.
Right. But I kind of think he ought to be great at a lot of things, a lot more things than what he's great at.
Oh, okay.
So he learned swordsmanship in about 2 years with Sean Connery. Right. So he got that nailed down like in 2 years and boom, he's good.
Yeah.
If that, you know, they're non-specific on how long. But what else is he really good at?
Right. Okay, so today we are reviewing the 1986 movie Highlander. It's rated R. It's an action, adventure, fantasy movie. And remember, I'm about to give you spoilers. So if you haven't seen it yet, go watch it. Come back and join us later. All right, so this is basically an immortal Scottish swordsman, and he's got to... We see him first, and I think he's from the 1500s. So he's living in the Highlands of Scotland. Think Braveheart. This is the type of... period he's in, and he finds out that he can't be killed.
Right.
And it freaks out his clansmen. They basically run him out of town. Mm-hmm. He's destitute, living on his own. And then at some point he meets a woman. He's living with this woman, his wife. And Sean Connery shows up to pay our hero, Connor McLeod is his name, a visit and explain to him like, hey, you're an immortal. And I was sent to train you up in the ways of being immortal. And basically you can't be killed. You're going to live forever through hundreds and hundreds of years, unless you get your head chopped off.
Yeah.
And that's when you die. So basically there's good immortals, there's bad immortals, and they're chasing each other through all these time periods of history. And we, you know, fast forward to the future. I'm using air quotes here. 1980s New York. Connor McLeod is now going by the name of Nash. He's an antiques dealer, which we mentioned earlier. Like, obviously, you should really know your antiques if you've lived for hundreds of years.
Right.
And you've been using these swords all through history. You should really be a good antique sword dealer. So he has this really fancy, swanky apartment. Clearly, he's done some good financial planning throughout all these years. And we come to find out one of the bad guys, the baddies of the immortal world, has come to New York to find him and finish him off, because apparently all these immortals are all working towards the day of
quickening.
The quickening, right? So when the last one lops off the last immortal's head, he gets this big surge of electrical energy, and then there's some prize. They're all trying to win some prize, which we don't really find out about until the very end of the movie. But yeah, so the whole story is really told with flashbacks. Like, we start out in 1500s Highlands of Scotland. We bounce back to 1980s New York. And then we see him other time periods kind of flashing back and forth. A few of his adventures here and there. And that's really how we start understanding the lore of the immortals. And he is the Highlander because he came from the Highlands of Scotland.
Right. And we mistakenly, or at least I mistakenly, thought of all the immortals as Highlanders, but really it's just him.
Yeah.
Because he's the immortal from the Highlands.
Exactly. So he's the Highlander of the immortals.
So you and I saw this yesterday for the first time in a good 20, 21 years.
Oh my gosh, has it been that long?
Yeah. Last time we saw this, we were in Jordan.
Oh.
I came and visited you.
Yes, you did.
And we killed some time by watching The Highlander, which was a movie we had seen when we were little, you know,
separate
from each other, growing up.
Yeah.
And I remember we liked it when we were kids. We liked it when you and I watched it 20 plus years ago.
As young adults.
I'm familiar with Highlander 2, but I remember nothing about that movie.
I don't remember anything about that movie either.
And then I was surprised when we were looking on HBO Max. There is a Highlander 3 and a Highlander 4.
Yeah, I didn't see either of those. I'm pretty sure. I don't remember seeing either.
I haven't seen those either. No, those came out like 90s and 2000, maybe early 2000s.
Interesting. I'd like to know, I haven't done any of the research on that. I wonder how they pair up with, because then there was also a Highlander TV series.
Right.
And so when I think fondly about the movie Highlander growing up, you know, my dad was big on watching these epic battle movies, right? Anything with, you know, Steven Seagal or what's the Van Damme,
Jean-Claude Van Damme,
or, you know, Sylvester Stallone, Bruce Willis. I watched all those things with my dad growing up. And this, you know, Conan the Barbarian, all those types. So Highlander was one of those. Like, I just have these great nostalgic, like, you know, I was kind of the son my dad never had, right? So I watched these big epic movies with my dad. And so I had all these fond memories, but then when all of it's lumped together in my head, but then when we watched the movie again, I remember, I really love the TV show, because we also watched Highlander, the TV show.
Right.
And so I don't know. I know the TV show took like a, it was a kind of an alternate ending to the first movie is where the TV show took off.
All right.
And so
I remember it being on when I was a kid, but I don't really remember much about it. I remember thinking
really like, epic.
The head dude looked like a young Sean Connery.
He really does. Yeah. His name's Adrian Paul, I think is that guy's name.
But he had McLeod as his last name though.
But
right?
He's Duncan McLeod in the series. In the movie, we're dealing with Connor McLeod. So you find out in like, I think the first season of that, like, Duncan MacLeod's kind of been living a normal life, also dealing in antiques in New York City with his girlfriend, you know, whatever, and kind of trying not to live the immortal life anymore. But Connor MacLeod shows up as an older man. And basically, it's an alternate ending because the game hasn't finished and there's still bad immortals out there. And he wants Duncan to come and help him defeat the bad immortals.
Okay.
So it's you know, it's a twist on what the movie actually did.
Well, after this, we'll have to watch Highlander 2. If it's terrible, maybe we just skip 3 and 4.
Well, I'm going to go back and watch the episodes now because we never watched anything in order when I was growing up. So if an episode of something was on, we just watched it.
Right.
So I'd love to go back now and see if they're as epic as I remember them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we'll talk about the soundtrack later, I'm sure. But Queen is the backing band for the movie, the series, everything. And so that epic, you know, Princes of the Universe song, I don't know if that's the title of it, but the Queen song plays at the beginning of every episode of the series. And it was just so huge. You know? It was, you know, it was really epic.
So why don't we launch into our high fives?
Okay, let's do that.
And for me, the first high five, the one that jumped out at me, and the one that really stuck with me too from way back when watching this as a kid, is how bad the bad guy is, but bad in a good way.
You mean like, like devilishly bad.
Yeah.
Not like bad actor bad.
Right. Clancy Brown is his name, and he plays the Kurgan.
The Kurgan.
And he is from the Kurgan tribe, and he's the first one to sort of kill, I'm doing in air quotes, the Highlander. 1500s.
Yeah.
The Kurgan stabs Connor McLeod, and it looks like McLeod's going to die, and he's pretty much pronounced dead by his village, but then the next day he's up, and he's feeling pretty good, and they all think he's made some sort of deal with the devil.
Yeah, they think he's definitely a witch or something.
Yeah. And so the Kurgan looks 7 feet tall.
Yeah, he looks massive.
And then throughout the movie, he does terrible deed after terrible deed, you know.
He's just the worst of the worst.
Yeah, I mean, he kills his best friend, you know, Connor McLeod's best friend, who's Sean Connery, and Ramirez is his name.
Yes, yeah.
And then, you know, violates his wife, and then later on, you know, he takes his present-day girlfriend.
Yeah.
Remember, they go through New York, and he's like running over people.
Yeah, like knocking people off bridges and terrorizing this woman that he's kidnapped. And and he busts into a church and like terrorizes some nuns and licks a priest's hand. Like, he's just gross. Like,
gross and nasty.
He is villain of all villains, this guy.
Yeah. So when I'm watching this, when I watched this as a kid, I thought, now this is a guy I would not want to rumble with.
No.
He
really looks like he's 8 feet tall. Like, he looks massive,
big,
human.
Mean, and he's nasty.
He's got this horrible scar on his neck where someone has tried to behead him.
Yeah. And, you know, he's got these classic one-liners, right? The one we've quoted throughout our years of marriage, but
it's better to burn out than to fade away.
Yeah. He's unhinged. Like, you don't really know what to expect from him next because he's so off, and he just does not care.
Well, that makes sense. If he's immortal, he's lived through hundreds of years, he's gone through all this time getting away with everything because you can't kill him unless you're another immortal that removes his head.
Right.
So he has no consequences for any of his actions.
Right. And then, you know, because he has that scar on his neck from where Ramirez sliced his neck, and he's got those pins,
safety pins on his, you know, he's got this real like punk rock look, right?
Yeah,
like,
he does. Guess what character that he voiced for a cartoon?
Our kids did not guess this either.
He actually plays Mr. Crab in SpongeBob SquarePants.
That's right. It's hilarious. But now when I hear Mr. Crab's voice, which we do have a child that likes to watch SpongeBob,
right,
so we hear it occasionally, I can hear it. I can see that as an older man, that's definitely the Kurgan's voice.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thankful that SpongeBob is animated and not live action, because I think we would hate Mr. Krabs if we saw that guy, because he was such a bad guy.
He's so awful, and you hate his guts. And, you know, the Connor McLeod character, he's good and we like him and we cheer for him.
Sure.
But most of that cheering for him is just like, you hate this bad guy so much.
Right.
And we talked about, it has to be a pretty epic bad guy to make you want the bad guy to get his head lopped off with a sword.
That's pretty extreme. Yeah, anger is kind of one of my go-to reactions to when things don't go my way. And I've never thought, I really would like to take that person's head off. Like,
right.
You know, like that's real. Like, if someone hears you say that in the wrong place, even if you're saying it, you know, tongue in cheek, like, you could go to jail.
Right.
That's a big deal.
It's a big deal. First and foremost, my high five goes to Clancy Brown playing the Kurgan.
All right. Good job, Clancy Brown. By the way, I did look up how tall he is, because I'm like, this guy looks massive.
Mm-hmm.
He's like 6'3", so he is a tall guy. He's taller than average.
Yeah.
But I think they really, the filming, the way they kind of always filmed him at
down,
a certain angle.
Up, cameras down, looking up at him.
Exactly. He always looks bigger than life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Compared to everybody else in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to give a shout out to Sean Connery, because we did lose Sir Sean just earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you really can't go wrong. Anytime Sean Connery, even though in this movie he plays the chief metallurgist for the King of Spain, but he himself claims to be an Egyptian and his last name is Ramirez. And he has the strongest, thickest Scottish accent
ever
that an Egyptian could ever hope to have. It's kind of all weird.
Yeah.
It's still Sean Connery, and he's still great. Like, the few minutes we get of him, you know, it's good stuff.
This Egyptian who lived in Spain for so many years has a much better Scottish accent than the Scottish guy named MacLeod.
Yes.
Whose accent's very nondescript.
It's an odd accent, honestly. Yeah. I don't understand Connor MacLeod's accent, but Sean Connery does not have an Egyptian accent.
But I agree, though. Overall, like, it doesn't matter.
You don't care. Exactly.
And Sean Connery does give a respectability to this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we talked about an actor, I think George Peppard, we talked about him a few weeks ago. Like, when you see him playing a space cowboy, it just works because you know George Peppard.
Yeah.
And he gives it some respectability.
There's a personality you're expecting from that actor.
Yeah.
Because of his catalog of work. And that's really what Sean Connery brings here.
So. Yeah.
And I would say he's a little bit of levity, too, because the bad guy has some levity, but he's so gross, you don't want to find it comedic, you know?
Yeah.
And the good guy really has zero levity. Like, he's intense, you know?
Yeah.
And kind of grouchy.
Right.
So Sean Connery gives you that levity you need from the...
Well, let me ask you, because we've talked about dark comedy a few times.
Oh, boy.
The bad guy gives us dark comedy.
Yes.
Did you chuckle at all or anything, or were you just hating him the whole time?
I chuckle at the one-liners because I know that's such a niche thing for you. Like, you're constantly quoting Arnold Schwarzenegger and whoever else is really into
some 1980s movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, like when he's looking at the nuns and he's like wiggling his tongue, making these crazy faces.
No, like I just want to punch that guy in the face.
Like, or like when he's speeding down the road with that girl and he's like laughing at her and then they're like they're hitting people.
No, I hate him with every fiber of my being when that.
See, that was like horror comedy right there.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Dark comedy. I should say dark comedy.
I'm not into it, man.
Or like when the old man gets out of the car and he sits down and there's the old lady there and he's like, "Hi, Mom."
Oh,
and they start going down the road. And
he carjacks the car from the old, throws the old man out, runs off with the old lady still in the car. And she's just screaming her poor head off. Probably.
So that's dark comedy, by the way.
But
you didn't see any comedy in that. You just hate it.
No, like I see what they're doing, but I don't enjoy that. Like,
Well, enjoy is a strong word, but like that's what they're going for. Something like a little chuckle factor.
I mean, I get it, but I don't love it.
Yeah.
No.
I'll give another high five to the overall concept of this film.
Okay.
What they're aspiring to do. It's pretty epic. I love this idea. And this is what I think of as why did I like it as a kid?
Mm-hmm.
Immortals who conquer each other through decapitation. And this idea that all of them, as they get fewer in number, that they're all innately drawn to a central point and have to do a final battle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just a really cool concept.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, the overall concept, I think, is dynamite. And that's probably why it was able to have a TV show. And we have three sequels.
Yeah, because it was so epic.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot more epic, you know, having to hunt down across the world these other immortals and do away with them in such a drastic, gross way. I will say the movie does a good job of not totally grossing you out with beheadings.
Oh, yeah.
That could be really dark.
Yeah.
But yeah, like when you think of that compared to, say, Thanos from the Avengers, he's going around the galaxy looking for trinkets to put in his glove so he can snap and make, you know, like that's just not as epic. You know, like he's not really personally doing battle.
Yeah.
You know?
It's PG-13 versus R.
Well, yeah. Maybe. Okay. There you go.
But, you know, the Gorgon, we saw a decapitation for our last episode.
And that was goofy.
It was kind of goofy. They should have done in the Gorgon what they did in this movie. So when you see a beheading in this movie, you just see a head kind of roll.
Yeah.
But it's like far away.
You never
away.
Focus on it. Yeah.
And that's effective because you see like a headless body and a head rolling.
Yeah.
And you're like,
but
ugh.
Not in like a slasher movie kind of way. There's not like blood just spurting everywhere and things being horrific. Like you know what's happened without zooming in and studying it.
Right.
You know.
So the people from Hammer doing the Gorgon, they should have watched The Highlander before making their movie.
Well, yeah, then they would have had to time travel. So I don't think that was gonna work out for them. Maybe when you invent time travel in your immortality.
Yes. I'll go back. We'll get Terrence Fisher.
Okay.
Get him on my
TARDIS.
Can
we get that movie with Ray Harryhausen then? You remember
doing special effects and Rod Serling doing the screenplay. I like it.
Make it happen, Hanshaw.
We'll make it.
All right. So I kind of mentioned this as my other high five. I mentioned this earlier, though. It was just the nostalgia of the movie. We talk about nostalgia all the time when we're reviewing movies that we've seen as a kid. Like, so much of this is just built up in my head because it was hugely epic. I didn't mm-hmm. care about cheesy or corny movies when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, and I watched this with my dad. This was one of our go-to, like if it's on, mm-hmm. I don't know, TBS or USA or something on a Saturday right. or Sunday afternoon, we're going to watch it, yeah. you know? And then I, like I said, I didn't realize like I had morphed the movie and the series kind of as one thing in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, like it is one of those great, great might be a strong word, but
80s action yeah, fantasy.
Yeah, it's not just an action, it's an action romance. You know, it's just got kind of mm-hmm. all the pieces there.
It's got something that we've talked about before that the 80s had quite a bit of.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't try to, and going back to politics, they didn't try to over-politicize things.
No, it was just a good story.
So this was directed by an Australian film director named Russell McKay. And he was best known for doing music videos from the 1980s.
Oh, I could see that.
So, you know, they have like, he did Culture Club, Duran Duran.
Oh, wow.
Bonnie Tyler, Fleetwood Mac, Elton John, Rod Stewart. You know, quite a few, you know, the who's who of the 1980s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And one thing that was unusual about this film was the filmography.
Yeah.
And kind of the inventive use of the camera. And a lot of that was done to hide some of the low budget aspects
right,
of the film.
Right, this did not have a huge budget, right?
Correct. We're getting into the low points now. And I can't say that all the filmography was bad. There was definitely some creative shots that I like. You know, there's like a shot in the beginning of the film where they're going into the wrestling match
mm-hmm.
and they kind of come in and they do this weird, it looks like it's on a drone, which yeah. they didn't have back then.
No.
But it kind of goes up and then zooms in on Connor McLeod in the theater. I'm sorry, in the Madison Square Gardens. So that kind of stuff was cool.
Right.
But then they had some goofy shots too.
Yeah, there's a lot of like screen swipe looking stuff.
That, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even our 15-year-old pointed out, he was like, okay. You know, I was like, yeah. that looked like a PowerPoint. You know?
Right. So there was some cheesy editing. You know, there was the first battle in Madison Square Gardens. They have one of the, not Highlanders, one of the Immortals. He's fighting, and just a scene that I'll pick on, mm-hmm. he's doing all these flips back and forth, back and forth, back
yeah,
and
not
forth.
Not Connor McLeod, the other, the bad guy. Immortal.
Yeah, the bad guy, or we assume is a bad guy.
Right.
But then, this is an example of the bad editing. Mm-hmm. So he's going in the opposite direction of Connor McLeod, but then in the very next scene,
oh, yeah.
he's walking, looking for Connor McLeod. Like,
idiot, why'd you do all those backflips in the wrong direction?
Yeah.
So they and he's an older guy. Like, he looks like somebody's elderly butler doing yeah. backflips in a parking garage.
Right.
I'm just like, who made this choice? Like, why do... I mean, I guess if you're immortal, you could spend your years learning to be an excellent gymnast. But yeah. it just wasn't... It was silly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, a low point that I'm going to bring out is the chemistry between Connor McLeod and his modern-day love in New York. Her name is Brenda... I think Brenda Wyatt, maybe?
Yeah, Brenda Wyatt.
She is... I guess kind of like a forensic scientist, works for the police in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's been brought in to kind of help solve these because there's some beheadings now happening in New York because these Highlanders are, or not Highlanders, these Immortals mm-hmm. are converging on this one spot to have their final showdown.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, she and Connor supposedly fall for each other.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just no... there's no buildup to it.
Yeah.
It's just like, she's following him. She realizes like he's probably involved in these murders somehow,
mm-hmm.
but he's trying to, at first he's like grouchily, you know, trying to skulk away and get away from her. And then it's like, no, now I'm trying to convince her of who I really am and my truth. And
yeah.
And then they're in bed together shortly after that. So it's yeah. like, okay, that was quick.
Right.
You know, there was no substance to the chemistry there. There yeah. was no chemistry and there was no substance to mm-hmm. their relationship, really.
Yeah. It was like the script said they had to be together, so they just were together.
Right.
But if you're watching it, you're wondering, like, why would she go for this guy? A lot of the shots, he's looking kind of creepy.
Yeah. Okay. So I like his look so much better as a Scottish Highlander than I uh-huh. do his modern day. He looks like a creeper.
Yeah.
And his, and I keep using air quotes that no one can see for his mm-hmm. modern look because it's 1980s New York. But
right.
he's always wearing white tennis shoes and relaxed fit jeans and this really long trench coat. I'm
yeah.
assuming to hide his sword in public because yeah. that would look bad if you're walking around New York City with a giant samurai sword.
He's got a bad haircut.
He's got this like yeah, bleached out. It looks like he put sun in his hair, you know, mm-hmm. and if you remember when people used to do that. So he's got this kind of orangey blonde, floppy mop top hairdo,
yeah.
non-hairdo.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a great look.
No.
And, but he gives us the smolder a lot, too. Like,
yeah.
You know,
he doesn't smile a whole lot.
No, I'm like, that worked. When you looked like you were ripped and wearing your kilt and your whole long hair Scottish Highlander look. But now that you're like nerd that just crawled out of somebody's basement.
Yeah, yeah.
That just looks creepy. The smolder is not working for you.
Well, I wonder how much of that look just aged poorly. Because
maybe so. That's
maybe
true.
In 86 that we wouldn't have associated that with, you know, a killer, you know, because I think, I don't know, things like Columbine happened after this where people were in short.
I mean, a school teacher was literally beheaded last year in France, you know, so right. I can imagine some, you know,
So there's
tortured
things,
soul.
Things haven't aged well from that sense. Maybe in 86 that was a better look, more attractive.
Ugh, I don't know.
But he wasn't smiling much. You're right. And. But we'll get to him in a few minutes.
Okay.
But I agree the chemistry between the two
lacking.
Was manufactured. It didn't make a whole lot of sense.
No.
Other than it just made the story move along.
Right.
And then, you know, I mentioned this before. This isn't so much a low point. It's just more of a wish. You know, I wanted more of the backstory of the Quickening. The whole idea of them all coming together for a prize. Mm-hmm. And then... you don't really know what the prize is until the very last scene when he's talking about, well, now I can have children and, you know, I don't have immortality anymore.
Yeah.
I can have lead a normal life.
Seems like a bit of a setback.
Yeah.
Doesn't
yeah.
seem like a prize. Yeah, so I don't know that we've set this up for the listeners, but basically if you're immortal, obviously you're immortal unless you get mm-hmm. beheaded, but you also can't have children.
Yeah, you're sterile.
Yeah, you're sterile. There's no settling down for you. Anybody, you know, it's like the whole Captain America thing. Like
yeah.
All of your love interests are going to age out.
Right. Which his first wife does.
Right. His first wife passes away, mm-hmm. never was able to have kids because he couldn't do that. So now that he wins the final Quickening and he's the last immortal, we finally find out his grand prize of being that guy to win the game, as they call it.
Yeah.
Is, well, now you can settle down and have kids, get married, and grow old.
Right.
And die like a normal human.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that seems backwards.
Right. And you just wonder, is that truly the prize, or is that just what he wanted? So they gave him the prize
maybe.
That he wanted. But all that is just, there's so many things that you just have to read into it.
Yeah.
And then you know, when he is kind of 10 feet in the air, getting quickened, I guess.
It looks like he's being struck by lightning a million times.
Lightning, but then there's also these drawn figures.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's like these cartoony...
kind of angry
dragon
faces
looking. Sort of, yeah. They made me think of dragons or something. But
they're coming in and out of his body, and you're like, are these demons that he's wrestling, or is this...
Yeah.
You know, and where did this happen? Are these aliens that have, like, created this whole system... You know, why does this system even exist?
There's
these...
a lot of story lacking there.
But it made me think.
And didn't he also hear, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but wasn't part of the prize also he could hear everybody's thoughts?
Yeah.
I'm like, wait, so now you're going to grow old, you're going to die, and you have to listen to everybody else's thoughts?
That's pretty terrible.
That's crappy.
Yeah.
Why were you even playing this game?
You should have let the Kurgan live, you know,
yeah,
and just
exactly.
run away from him.
Just go hide.
Yeah, but I thought, you know, we talked about Big Trouble in Little China. This is another one that I think would be due for a modern TV series.
Oh, yeah, a refresh.
A refresh, because, you know, you have all the story that you could set up. You know, just like we talked about, the quickening and the what are the things that make all of this happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the powers that be that kind of orchestrate this whole system? You could get into some real mythology and some lore. You could paint that in a show that you really can't do in an hour and a half movie.
No. Yeah.
Now, I do think there's a few things I would have done differently. Like, they added some odd comedy throughout the movie, like him getting stabbed, you know, in that duel with the guy.
Yeah, that looked like maybe 1700s.
Yeah, kind of colonial.
Yeah, yeah.
It was funny and whatever, but they could have cut that scene and then added more to the romance, like to try to build up some of that.
Yeah, exactly.
They could have done that, but I too get, like, maybe they said, well, this is a very serious movie, 80s action movies, we need some comedy too. Let's throw in a little bit of lightheartedness, some levity, because our movie is about guys that chop other guys' heads off.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of understand why they would go in that direction,
sure.
But... I do think in a TV show, you would have time to do all of that.
Right, right.
You could have him go through different points in history. He could have flashbacks and have these sub stories. A whole episode could be about a memory.
Yeah. You could carry it through a whole season. Yeah. Whatever these little subplots are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Doctor Who's done for eons.
Yeah. So that's a free idea out there for any Netflix
Man,
investors.
We're just giving this stuff away.
All right. Let's go on to some of our other cast members. We've talked a little bit about Christopher Lambert already.
That's our Connor McLeod.
Connor McLeod. I remember really, really liking him, but what I realized yesterday was that he wasn't the most likable hero as much as, you know, I alluded to this earlier, but the bad guy was just so bad. Mm-hmm. You almost would cheer for anybody over that bad guy.
Right.
But, you know, his performance was pretty good. I think really just like what you got at is the modern times, he was a little bit one note, you know, in that he's kind of this tortured, keep to himself hermit. But then when he flirts, it comes across as creepy.
Yeah, yeah. It's over the top.
Yeah.
Like, wow, buddy, you're laying it on thick right now.
And back to this TV show idea. So I wanted more from that relationship with the girl that he raised as his daughter.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even mentioned her. So one of his timelines is, you know, 1940s. I'm assuming he's in Germany. He's somewhere in Europe. And we see that he rescues a little girl from a Nazi soldier.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we clearly know without being shown that this lady has grown up with it. He's raised her basically like a daughter, and she works as his kind of assistant, secretary of his antiques business. But she's an older lady now.
Yeah. And she knows all of his secrets.
Yes. Yeah. I guess she's the only person, really, other than other immortals, that know his business.
Yeah. And so they clearly love each other, like father daughter relationship.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know. I just wanted more of that. I thought it's kind of a cool idea of this old lady being a daughter figure to this young, good-looking guy. Mm-hmm. You know, just that, I don't know. There's something there that's like kind of cool.
Right. It's just, it's different.
It's different, you know, and I think it would have been cool to have more of
so
that story.
We got so little of that story. I think you're right. That was more believable because we actually saw the action sequence where he rescues her from a Nazi soldier that was about to shoot. He'd killed all of her family already, you know. And so there was already a tie there that was easy to build upon versus, you know, this Brenda lady who, you know, they instantly fall in love and, you know, he's going to grow old and hear all the voices with her for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not so much his fault, but like that scene when he's saying goodbye to her and she's, you know, the daughter figure, you know, that she puts two and two together that, you know, even if you survive this, you're not coming back, are you? I don't know. I felt like I should have felt more there. And I always, you know, assess these things based on how I feel. And do I feel an emotional pull somewhere?
Right.
And here I was like, you know, I feel like I should be feeling more here.
And you just weren't.
I wasn't feeling that. Gotcha. And it's like, well, I wasn't too invested in their relationship because they didn't make me invest in it. You know, they didn't really put much to that other than the little girl scene.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to him. He's kind of one note when, you know, in New York. And then even when he throws out these little one-liners and zingers, you know, I think that it hurts him a little bit because he's been so down and dark.
It just seems arrogant.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't come across as like the classic good guy that you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, this is me being funny. You know, it just, it didn't have that spark to it at all.
No. Yeah.
And but you saw that in the flashback scenes when he does rescue the little girl. Like, I don't remember what he said, but there was kind of a wink and a smile, like, because he gets shot by the Nazi, and so the Nazi guy thinks he's dead.
Yeah.
But he kind of winks at the girl, like, shh, don't tell him, you know? Yeah. Like, and so there's that likability coming through, and he just loses that. Sorry, I just hit the microphone. He loses that as he gets into the 1980s. And that version of him is just not nearly as likable as the Scottish version or the colonial version or the World War II version.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a rough 40 years, I guess.
Well, you know, a lot happened from the 40s to the 80s.
I guess. But, you know, I don't know how much of that's him. I'm going to blame him, you know, or if it's just the material he was given.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so he doesn't get a low point, but it's just, I guess I wanted a little more, and maybe if you keep watching the movies, you get more from him, you know, from a, I don't know, maybe there's more payoff later. I'm just guessing, but I think a TV series would help you invest in him a little more.
You got me stoked to go back and watch this TV series. I mean, it's really built up in my mind. I hope it's not garbage.
Yeah. Oh, so we mentioned Brenda Wyatt. She's played by Roxanne Hart. She's the love interest.
Oh, she's fine. No, she's a placeholder, you know? Like, we need a love interest. Here she is. Like, I, you know.
It's another tool of convenience to say that she's a sword specialist.
Oh, right, right. She
That's
did.
Something else. She wrote a big, thick book, like coffee table book on swords. And so that, I don't know if that attracted him to her as well, or if that was chicken or egg. I didn't know if that was chicken
or
egg.
Well, apparently she was hiding that from him in the beginning because he found her. He has an extensive library, as he says.
Right.
And so he found her book authored by her on his shelf and brings it to her and is like, hey, I know who you are. Actually, he presents it as a gift. It's wrapped up. He's going to actually have dinner with her. And she unwraps it. She's like, oh, what'd you bring me? And she opens it up and she's like, oh, busted, you know?
Yeah.
And so... I don't really understand. I guess because he wasn't supposed to know she was working with the police.
Mm-hmm.
She was kind of getting to know him originally to find out if he's responsible for these killings.
Right.
And he basically busts her and says, I know who you are. But then all of a sudden we're madly in love and, you know, doing things that we have to fast forward for our children.
And again, I wonder, too, how much of this is just spoiled by time. But I'm thinking there's beheadings going on in New York City. And New York City in the 80s wasn't even a safe place.
Right.
By any account. And then, you know, you're inviting him over to your place. This guy that you just
unknown
met.
Man who you think beheads people.
Yeah. He's gives you creepy vibes anyway. I don't know. The whole, I guess she has a gun, so she thinks, well, if it gets real bad, I'll get the gun and I'll just shoot him. But it seems like
poor
a stretch.
Planning. Yeah.
What did you think about his first wife? It looks like her
Heather,
name's
Heather.
Yeah, Heather. Yeah.
She was the blonde Scottish lady.
Yeah. She seems sweet.
She, she gave off this sweet, like, I'm just in love with my Scottish Highlander. And, you know, it was sweet because we got to see her grow. A film tactic that I liked.
Yeah.
Maybe you could see it coming, but it was still nice. Like, we kind of see a little montage of them, you know, being young lovers, living on the side of this beautiful hillside in Scottish Highlands. And then basically he comes home one day and is calling for her. And she's like, I'm coming. You can't see her, but you can hear her. And she's coming up the field with like a little lamb in her arms. And you realize like, oh man, she's an old lady now.
Yeah.
Right? Like he stayed young and handsome and virile. And and she's clearly like this aged woman. And then we have the whole death scene. And, you know, clearly he has to tell
and
her
that
goodbye.
And that was sad.
That was sad. That was way more believable as a relationship than Brenda in New York. But, you know, and I think they could have stuck with that and like basically no woman could ever have his heart again kind of thing.
Yeah.
But he raised this other lady as his daughter and those would have been fine to work out through the rest of the movie. But it was the 80s and you probably needed to throw in a gratuitous sex scene. So. I don't know. Who knows?
Who knows? And there's some actors that play cops and they kind of. They're a little bit one note too.
Oh man, talk about some over the top acting. I think the first cop we see in New York, what is that in the? That's actually in the Madison Square Gardens parking garage, I think.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, wow, this might have been his first acting gig.
Yeah, when he's questioning Christopher Lambert in the jail, I don't know.
For
some reason, they're on display for all the criminals.
Yeah, their interrogation room. Like, every time you see an interrogation room now, it's like a room with no windows. Or like one, you know, one-way, two-way mirror, whatever you call that, where somebody can see in the room, but they can't see out of the room. And this was like, had windows all the way around the room, and all the other criminals in the jail are just loose, watching what's going on in the interrogation room.
Right.
Like, and what's going on in New York jails?
Yeah, the cops do look pretty bad in this movie. As with most movies today, unfortunately, cops usually get a bad rap.
This is true.
But something very unique about this film, and we would be remiss without talking about it, is Queen does the soundtrack. And they wrote original songs for this movie specifically. And the one that I know the best isn't the one that you mentioned that's at the intro for the show, but it's Who Wants to Live Forever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was composed by Brian May. Apparently, Queen, one thing I like about Queen is they are a true band. They kind of split up duties.
Right.
And each of them took a favorite scene and came up with a song to do.
That's cool.
And so Brian May came up with this Who Wants to Live Forever theme. Freddie Mercury did the New York, New York version.
Uh-huh. He's kidnapped Brenda.
Mm-hmm. He has this crazy version of New York, New York, which is really cool.
Right.
And they also say It's a Kind of Magic, like two or three times, which is a well-known Queen song.
Oh.
And then, of course, that epic song that you were talking about. I forget the name of that one, but...
Yeah.
It definitely is...
I don't know if it's Princes of the Universe, but I know that's a, like, opening line.
Yeah.
You know,
there's sometimes I feel like the Queen music is so epic and, like, so perfect for this film, and it really gives us its character. And overall, I would say I feel that way. But even our son, when he watched it, he said it was a little bit overkill, a little bit.
Right. Well, he's a big orchestra guy, our oldest son, and he really wished it had... more orchestral pieces, you know, in the montages and in the normal scenes. Like, every little thing didn't have to be a Queen song.
Yeah. And even when she goes to the bar.
Right.
There's a Queen song in the background.
Which is cool for Queen, but as for, if you're trying to make a movie that's going to stand the test of time, which we do mention a lot, you got to have some music that's going to hold up through the test of time, too. And, you know, as epic as Queen is... they were here for a period of history, you know.
Right.
They made their mark in a certain period of music.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, you know, that's that it leaves that date stamp on the movie when you're watching it.
Yeah. Now, how do you feel, this is just an aside, but what's the one with Heath Ledger where they also use Queen music? But it's
Night's Tale.
Yeah, Night's Tale. So it's used differently, though, there.
And it's only used sporadically. It's not the whole movie.
And it's not just Queen, but there's, like, David Bowie. There's other...
David Bowie's in there. Yeah. I guess that's different.
Yeah, why does that work a little better?
Maybe. This is off the cuff. I haven't given this any thought at all. But because it's a juxtaposition, that whole story is written in medieval times. We're dealing with knights and princesses and jousting and all of those chivalry and whatnot. But then we have the, you know, the opposite of modern pop music being thrown in. So maybe that, and I don't know, well, let's watch it in 15 or 20 years and see if we still feel the same way about it. But I love A Knight's Tale, and one of the reasons is because of that, just hit of modern music coming through when you're watching a jousting scene, you know. You've got the whole crowd even getting into the boom, boom, tsh.
You know, we will rock you.
Yeah, the We Will Rock You chant. Everybody's doing it in the crowd. And you're like, that's so not how that would have gone down, but it's great. It's a really fun twist on that whole thing. So, yeah, I guess maybe it's the juxtaposition of the opposites that works there. Whereas this is an 80s movie and this is Queen's 80s music.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe this is a case, too, where less would be more.
Well, so if you have, that's probably true.
If you have three Queen songs in this film, you know, at key points, so you could have had that high, that emotional high that Queen brings you, but then, like you were saying, maybe some orchestral pieces for other parts.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, I think A Knight's Tale does have background music. I can't say right now, because I haven't watched it in a while, if it was like orchestral suites or anything happening, but I do think that there are places where there's just... music happening, whereas, you know, every Queen song is a lyrical piece. You know, you've got someone singing in the background.
Right.
So you kind of, it kind of brings you out of the mood of the setting.
Right.
Because you're also listening for, you know, I know that I recognize this song, or they're singing such and such, you know.
And some of it, because this director, his background was music videos.
Right.
And then you have popular music from the era. And then the filmography is weird. It's not like, you know, most films from the time. It does come across a little bit like music video-ish.
It does, yeah. Once you said, I didn't realize the guy basically had only done music videos until this movie. But I could totally see that now that you've pointed it out.
Yeah.
I have a cat climbing on this table, by the way.
Yeah, you might try to drink your drink.
Stay away, cat.
All right, final summations. What say ye, Kim? Yay or nay?
Well, it gets a yay. It's not like a resounding yay. Everybody should definitely see this, you know. But again, it gets the nostalgic vote for me because this is lumped into my childhood. And the story is an epic story. I would love to see someone take this and do something cool with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it gets a yay.
Yeah. Yeah, again, it's a yay for me, too. I loved the whole lore, like we talked about. I love the story. I love the idea, like we said, of adopting a girl, watching her grow old, and, you know, even this man wrestling with, you know, don't get involved with women because, you know, they're just going to grow old and
die. It's going to break your heart, yeah.
Yeah. All of those are great for storytelling.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot you could do with that.
Oh, yeah.
But for this movie, just in its of itself, I think it's a good film. It's enjoyable. It's something that if you grew up in the 80s, you'll really appreciate this movie. And like we talked about, you just don't get these kind of movies today.
No.
If they made this today, just as a film, like if it was an epic blockbuster, there would be all of this CGI.
Oh, yes.
And,
for sure.
And, you know, and not to be this to death, but there would be some over-politicization, you know, things would be politicized to the nth degree. And, you know, it's just like, you know, you're not going to get that mixture of action and comedy and drama and all that that the 80s offered. So,
right.
And, you know, not to over-glamorize the 80s, because this film could have definitely been better. There's
sure.
things they could have done to make it better.
Yeah.
So just a reminder to post on our social media accounts. Let us know what you think of the movies that we say that we're going to review. David Wing Photo posted on our Instagram, The Highlander, one of my top five films. Absolutely adore it.
Oh, all right.
So yeah, good
Glad
one.
Glad we could cover one of your faves, David.
And then the Real Dude Podcast said, love this. Fire, fire, fire.
Wow. All right. Three fires.
And then my sister posted,
hey.
Wendy Pineapples said, I used to love this movie. Didn't we pretend to chop each other's heads off and yell, there can be only one?
We do say there can be only one in this house a lot.
Yes. Yes. There was a waitress at, at, what was it, Don Pablo's? Yeah, yeah, they Don Pablo's was a restaurant,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
In Lakeland.
We
for a
used
while.
To go there. Was it Wednesday nights? They had like buy one, get one fajitas or something. I don't remember.
So there was a waitress there that had this real gruff voice that we talked about sounding like we'd always say, better to burn out than to fade away.
I do not remember this waitress.
But we joked that she was the bad guy from The Highlander.
That's hilarious. Oh my word. Hey, Wendy.
All right. So what are we watching next week?
All right, so next week we're going to bring it up a little more recent movie, but still from the 20th century. This is the 1998 movie named Sphere. Okay. It's a PG-13 movie. Basically, a spaceship is discovered under 300 years worth of coral growth at the bottom of the ocean. And this has kind of an all-star cast, but we've never seen it. I had never even heard of it until you mentioned it.
Yeah.
It's based on a Michael Crichton novel. It stars Dustin Hoffman, Sharon Stone, Samuel L. Jackson, and I think there's a lot of other folks in there we're probably going to recognize.
Okay.
So
I don't even remember this one.
Yeah, I literally never have no memory of ever hearing of this.
Yeah.
So
this coming week, we wanted to do something that neither of us have watched before.
Yeah.
And just kind of go in with a blank slate and just see what we come up with.
Exactly. So. Seems like it has sort of an Abyss or Alien type vibe. I don't know. We'll
see. And it's free on Tubi TV. You can watch it there.
That's right. That's
where we got the idea. We were just looking, browsing and say, hey, let's try this movie.
Exactly. We're always looking for something new.
Yeah. All right.
We'll give it a shot.
Looking forward to it. That's cool.
All right. Happy movie watching.
Yep. Peace out.
Peace out, guys.